Das ist der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast, der Podcast rund um Nachtleben und Clubkultur.
Wir sprechen mit DJs, Türstehern, Tänzern, Clubbetreibern und anderen Nachtmenschen.
Mein Name ist Gesine Kühne.
Und ich bin Jakob Töne.
Herzlich willkommen beim Electronic Beats Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Telekom Electronic Beats podcast. I'm really excited that you tuned in, as this one is very special to me. Everyone has these artists who kind of shaped your youth and had a big impact on your musical taste. For me, it was the label Ed Banger Records and Justice. So for this episode, I'm very happy that I got the chance to talk to one half of the French duo, Gaspard Auger. He told me why and how they started their musical career and why sometimes it's better not to be too professional when you start with a creative project. We also talked the inspiration behind his upcoming first solo album, Escapades, and how to handle periods of self-doubting during the production process. But before I reveal too much, let's get into the conversation with Gaspard Auger. Salut, bonjour, Gaspard. Hello.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Bonjour to Paris, I think. Are you in Paris right now?
Yeah, I'm in Paris. And bonjour, Jacob. Where are you?
I'm in Hamburg. So for the people out there, we are, of course, recording remotely. And I want to go straight away to the point. Gaspard, you've said once, I've always been obsessed with making larger than life music, mostly because it's more fun. What did you mean by that?
For example, I've never been into minimal techno, no, and it's something I really never understood. And I only understood minimal techno when I took mushrooms, and then it all made sense, you know, to have like very repetitive and very well recorded music. But I guess when I'm in a normal state of consciousness, I just like music that is a bit baroque and romantic, and somehow when I say larger than life, it's just that it's not like music about my daily life, you know, like it's
so more supreme, more like transporting feelings, like at first sight.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is what I love about classical music, for example, is that it gives you probably greater emotions than what you can experience in life. You know, like, there is this kind of sacred quality that I like in classical music. And mostly because it's more entertaining for me. And I'm just speaking for myself, but to make like the music I make, than making like depressive folk music, you know? Yeah. I mean, I really love folk music, but I mean...
You're not into producing that.
Yeah, that I'm kind. Not really like into the... Don't take me wrong, I really love a lot of folk records, and it has nothing to do with the genre, but I guess it just depends on your personality, like how much you want to reveal of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm not a singer, I'm not a storyteller. So my way to convey emotions, it's mostly like, yeah, with instrumental music.
I would say you're not a storyteller. I mean, whenever I listen also back to the older Justice albums, they're all telling somehow a story, but through music, not through words. I also listened to your new album, your first solo album coming out now or within the next weeks. It's called Escapades. What was your biggest inspiration producing that album?
I guess I've been listening to a lot of library music, mostly like for probably the five past years. And I guess it's mostly a matter of taste and sensitivity in a way, like the fact that probably music from the 60s and 70s, there was no cynicism, you know, into this music. It was very pure and sincere in some way.
Yeah.
And I guess cynicism like came in with probably punk music. And I mean, obviously you had like very cynical artists before that, but I mean, the general feel of these decades is more, there's something very naive and probably
very direct, I'd say. Like, yeah, very not direct, fielded with effects or so. I could really tell that there are some influences from the 70s and 80s, and I had immediately images in front of my mind because, I mean, the sound is very, yeah, somehow also cinematic. Did you also had certain sceneries or certain images in mind when you were in the album process?
I guess it was mostly like the when we were recording the tracks, I already had images, like for example, like this horse rider violin player, like it's something I already had in mind when we were recording Hey. And mostly because the emotions are, in my opinion, like very accessible, you know, like they are not accessible in the way that you can find them at the supermarket of emotions, but it's more like, in my opinion, this record is quite accessible and welcoming. You know, it's not like free jazz. It's not like concrete music.
So very straight rhythm and easy to access is always a bad way to describe music. But I would say that you can really, as I said, immediately I had images in front of my mind that also transported a certain feeling that came with the music. So
that's good. And actually, this is also something I'm interested in not using like lyrical content. Is that there's no there's less interference between, like for example, your musical background and your own experience, and I guess it's easier to let your imagination wander when you're listening to this kind of music.
So making your own lyrics and your own vocals.
Yeah, and your own narrative and your own movie in your head.
Yeah, I totally get that for the album. I've listened to an interview of you and Xavier where you described the rooms where you recorded the first two albums. I think The Cross was in the second or third basement below the social club in a very tiny room without oxygen. And that the album totally fitted that room, like a dance album. And then the next one was recorded in a very daylight, fluted room. I think it was your own apartment. For that album, it doesn't sound like third basement. But I couldn't imagine a room that could fit the sound. Maybe you can take us on a little imaginary tour to your studio where you recorded the album.
Yeah, actually, like it was made in a very like playful way, you know, like because obviously there was no like real pressure about doing a solo record, because I already knew that the music like wouldn't serve the same purpose, you know, and also I guess obviously like when you start a solo project after a duo, but the duo is still going, you know, there's it's not like if we had like broken up with Xavier and split up, and then you start something and you're a bit like frightened that it won't have the same resonance with people. But I guess it's also what's fun is to make a solo record after like almost 20 years of being in a duo. And I guess the really like the word that comes to my mind when I think of the process of recording, it's really like it was very joyful, joyful and playful and experimenting with stuff, with gear, like with and just it was just a lot of fun to make.
Maybe a good way to pass the time during a global pandemic. as the time was right, maybe for this.
It's funny because I finished the record like a bit before the pandemic.
Oh, okay.
But then, for some reason, like finding the title and everything, it kind of made sense with the pandemic, you know, like just when you can't travel physically, you have to travel in your own head. And I guess, but at least I hope that this record, like, is some kind of window to an imaginary better world. Yeah.
A little imaginary vacation. Yeah. By listening.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to get to the early days of you and how you got into music. How were you socialized musically? I've read your parents are, or like one of your parents is a theater actor, yeah, and a teacher. How did that influence you? Was like the theater scene, was it also kind of influential in terms of music?
I don't really know like how much influenced me like from theater, I guess. Not that much, but it's mostly my parents, like they had like probably, I don't know, like 5 records at home. You know, they were not really into music.
Okay. And that changed then with your taste of music.
No, but it's funny because actually like the few records they had made like a really deep like imprint, you know, on my musical taste and everything.
Do you remember what records?
Were yeah, like the two I really remember. It was Gymnopédies from Eric Satie, and also another record of a French medieval folk band of the 70s that was called Malicorne. And obviously, like when I was thinking about this record, like a few years later, I was like, "Oh yeah, it was a really weird record." but I guess it kind of makes sense, you know, like because Eric Satie, like he has like such a specific way of writing, you know, like there's always this kind of uneasy feel about his music, you know, and also it's very simple but very specific emotions that he provides, you know, because I think Eric Satie had this idea to write like very technically simple music to play so everybody could play it in homes, in music salons, you know.
Yeah.
So there was this idea of making something simple that could be played everywhere and understood by a lot of people. And then obviously I got into my teenage years and I was completely like hit by Nirvana and all the grunge scene and everything.
That's a great jump from Eric Satie then to Nirvana. I've read your first album you've bought was Nevermind, the album.
I think it was Nevermind, or maybe In Utero, yeah, I don't remember. It was the tape of In Utero, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Nirvana and the grunge scene, it's also showing a certain lifestyle. Did that suit you at that time?
I guess like the lifestyle was probably more fascinating than the music itself. I mean, it was a whole, but obviously we all wanted to have long hair and to wear like flannel shirts, you know, and but also this is what I like about grunge, like apart from the decorum and the music, it's probably one of the last like musical revolution, but in the sense that it was very local, you know, it was a very local scene. And I guess maybe today it's harder to find like local specificities, you know. I mean, obviously like when you live there, you can still see them and hear them, but there is this kind of a dictature of Instagram cool, you know, and Insta cool.
So whenever there's a local trend, it's already spread globally, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's harder to develop something more personal on your own without being over-influenced by what is cool and what should be cool, you know?
I've taken a note because, I mean, grunge, in my opinion, is also a very unperfect style in terms of that when you're not matching the tune and you're not have the drums on point, it doesn't matter because that's the way it is. Mm. And it shouldn't be like very straight and very stricted. And I kind of found this also in the early Justice songs, because it was also very new. The sound was, let's say, unshaped, very open cutoff filters, and also very raw. At some point, sometimes no filters. Was this, like, when you look back to the early days of Justice, do you also see a connection between grunge, maybe, and then the first Justice singles?
I mean, there's definitely something in common, like, and maybe probably more with Paillet. I mean, like, grunge derives from punk music as well. You know, I guess when I say punk, it's more in the sense that, okay, like, it's young guys that want to make aggressive music, but they don't really know how to play their instruments. And I guess it was the same for us, you know, like, we were just in our 20s and trying to make electronic music without knowing how to do it and without having any electronic music background, you know. So we were just, okay, so we want to make music with computers, but we don't really know how to. And I guess it's in the accident, you know, that it creates your style, because obviously the first record, like, sounds very bad from an academical, you know, like a sound engineer point of view. But it's what gives it style, I guess. And I guess that's the most important.
So you and Xavier didn't play any instruments at that time? Or you were just trying out and experimenting?
Yeah, I mean, we played a bit of bass and piano. But, like, I mean, like, for us, like, it's a bit like, I don't know, like Johnny Rotten, like, picking a guitar. Like, for us, it was using a computer, you know, like, it was... mostly like a trial and error strategy, you know, like, just
we can't fail anyway.
I mean, obviously you can, but I mean, it's and also the fun part, and what was really like our like school of music was to do remixes, because we didn't have much implication, like, because when you do a remix, like, either people like it or they don't, but you have less exposure. And so for us, it was just a way to learn how to make music on a computer and just to have fun with a very limited amount of equipment. So we had to be more creative. And I guess, yeah, there's always something good when you don't know too much about the tricks from your craft, you know?
Yeah.
And just to keep something a bit innocent and fresh.
Just using a compressor without knowing what it's for, you mean?
Yeah, for example.
At that time, how did you create this interest in making electronic music? As you said, you both had no dance background or no electronic music background. How did you get there? Have you been to more club shows or to more electronic clubs at that time in Paris?
Actually, I guess, like, before we had to play, like, in clubs, we were never going out in clubs. I guess we were more like, like concerts, guys. Yeah. And also, like, in Paris, like, the club culture is definitely not as, exciting than in other European cities. I mean, it's very posh in a way, you know, like, obviously you had like a few good clubs, like, with good music, like, I remember a club I really liked that was called Le Pulp, and they were playing like very daring music. Like, there was nothing commercial about it. Like, it was very, I mean, this is where I discovered like No Wave and stuff like this, and weird like electronic bands, like The Normal and stuff like this.
So beside the mainstream then?
Yeah, because I guess we've never really been interested into house music. And I guess it's something that has been, you know, like thriving in clubs, like, for, I don't know, like, maybe almost 30 years. And it was hard for us to be excited about this kind of music. And especially at the time when we started, we came in after the first big wave of like a French touch, you know, and I guess there was something very polished about this sound. And obviously, like, we would have loved to have a polished sound, but we just didn't know how. So we were like going the other way by distorting everything and over compressing stuff just to have some energy and to get away with it with another kind of production.
When you then started, or when you made your first record, or also the remixes, was it clear to you that you're going to be or become a professional DJ or musician at that time?
Not really, because you know, like when people like start to know you, like I remember, like in the beginning, we were still working as graphic designers, and I guess it's not really something that happens overnight, you know. Like at first, like we just had one record out, and we were like so excited. Oh yeah, we have one record out, and it's the first one, and we are still working like as graphic designers. So it was never like I guess like neither of us like has ever dreamt of being a professional musician. Like it just happened, and at some point we decided, okay. Maybe it's more fun to make music at on a professional level than being graphic designer. So we just switched. But in the end, it's a bit the same process, you know. Like it's more about like aiding your project, like either in graphic design or music. Like if you have somehow a clear vision of what you want to achieve, like you know, you don't have to be like Michelangelo, you know, to be a graphic designer, and you don't have to be like Mozart to do music. You know, you don't have to be a virtuoso to achieve something when you have like all the electronic tools. But still, it's a great tool, but it's very easy to get lost into it, and so you have to
keep on track. Yeah,
keep on trying stuff.
But I'd say it's a good decision that you decided on being a full musician at that time.
Thank you.
Getting back to Paris and also to Javier, I've heard you've met on a party, on a private party back then in the early 2000s. And when you met each other, was it friendship at first sight? Did you already make silly jokes about, yeah, let's start something and we're going to be the next stars or something like that?
No, because we never thought like
you're going to make it.
Gonna achieve anything, you know. I mean, when we first met, I guess what we had in common was some kind of dry humor, you know, like we were just like, yeah, making jokes in the kitchen of that party. And then we started to hang out, just to hang out, you know, like friends do. And at the time we didn't even have a computer, so we were making music, like you know, like on the weekends with a very cheap sequencer and a cheap synthesizer and like to be able to do like masters for the track. And actually at the time we were not even calling them masters, you know, like they were we just needed something to record the tracks. And so we had to borrow like a CD burner from a friend and then like press record and just play and sequence everything. And then we that was the master, like, so that's how We Are Your Friends has been made, like in a very what's the word?
Very different to nowadays production.
Yeah, just like very archaic.
Yeah, crazy. And then by 2003, you were signed by Ed Banger.
Yeah.
What was it like to be on the label at that time? What was the label like? How was the feeling? I always had the feeling that Ed Banger is some kind of crew. And when I was young, I was totally digging also the first compilations, etc. I always had the feeling those guys are just hanging around doing crazy nice stuff, graphic design, music. How was the atmosphere in the group back then?
It was really fun, but also it was very it was on a very small scale, you know, like we were just like basically four friends, you know, working together because Somi, the graphic designer of Headbanger, we were like roommates with Xavier in a very in the dirtiest apartment you could find in Paris. You know, it was really a nightmare. But also, like, we were young, you know, we didn't care, and we just like did things, and we didn't think too much about like, yeah, what's what and what are we gonna do next. It was just very fluid and natural, and it was more like an adventure of friends, you know. And because in the beginning, like Pedro's label, Headbanger, was very small, you know, like we were like the second reference on the label. So it was, and I mean, obviously, like we knew that Pedro used to be the Daft Punk's manager, but apart from that, like, yeah, we were just happy to have a record out, but the image of the label was very
very very independent.
Yeah, it was just it was very young, you know. Yeah. Like, so, but then, yeah, I guess we had this spirit of family and friendship, and just like going over the world and playing parties and having fun. But I guess, yeah, we are still living in the same neighborhood. The label is still in the same like small shop, and so I guess, yeah, like obviously, like we took things on to a bigger scale, but still the same guys, you know, like working,
same energy. Friends. Yeah, great. When somebody has been to a concert of yours, it's always like everybody can tell, I think, that it's always full of energy and full of loudness and, I don't know, like really great energy. And every time I saw you on stage, I was thinking, like, how do you guys feel on stage? Because it's like the crazy strobe going on, crazy beats, the bass is so loud, and you guys are, like, especially you, Gaspar, you're quite calm on the stage. How are you feeling on stage?
The energy, yeah, obviously, like, comes more from the music than ourselves, in the sense that you know, we are not like Mick Jagger and David Bowie, so obviously we have to rely on some like theatricals, like to make the shows like interesting, because, like, to be honest, I never dreamt of being on stage in front of people and everything, you know. It's something I enjoy while I do it, but also I'm really not looking after being the center of attention and being in the limelight, you know.
So maybe that's also a reason why they define the cross as a third member of Justice, because it's like the highlights. Everybody's looking at the cross because it stands so out. Could be the David Bowie of Justice then.
Yeah, it's definitely the third member, and this is why, you know, like, we don't put our faces on the record, and we are not like overplaying, you know. Enfin, we are not hiding, but we are not either playing that that character thing, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah,
you're still very successful with Justice since like over 15 years or so, and in 2019 you have won another Grammy. How was that for you after so many years getting such an award?
It felt good, because it came like I guess almost about after 20 years of career, and especially because it was for this record that was somehow a kind of best of Justice. It was just a good way to close this chapter, you know.
It was basically a remix album where you remixed your own tracks, and not just one track, but sometimes three or two tracks with each other.
Yeah, it was the music we played live, but that we remixed in the studio. And so, so it felt good, but I mean, the Grammys is a very like prestigious ceremony and everything, but in the end, like it's the greatest thing about getting a Grammy is that it gets you with types of music, you know, that are, for example, like much more like mainstream, and I guess it feels good to have recognition, just to be on the radar of the Grammy people. It's just a funny experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you're used to big ceremonies. I remember the was it the MTV Music Video Awards where you won an award for the video of Dance?
Yes,
I think back then, and there was this appearance from Kanye West. That was your first big award, and then somebody crushed it. It was kind of funny.
I guess it's great because obviously, like. Award ceremonies, they are not really interesting if there's no like clash, you know.
No story to tell, yeah.
So yeah, I guess we can thank Kanye for making it like unforgettable. Yeah.
Shout out to Kanye. After all those achievements, also now with the Grammy, is there any pressure not to fail, or are you more relaxed? Like we achieved everything. I don't care. Like you've done with a solo album that you have no pressure because the justice is still ongoing and it's not that the solo album needs to have the same ambition as the Justice album, for example, or the same expectation.
I don't know, because like every time you start a new record, you know, like you can success or fail. So I guess we're just doing like the best we can to entertain ourselves, you know, and not make something that we already did like 1,000 times. And it's not a really conscious decision. It's just that we don't want to make the same thing over and over. So we're just like changing setups, you know, buying new equipment, selling some, buying some. And just try to get out of our comfort zone and to challenge ourselves. And then if people get it, we are happy. And if they don't, maybe sometimes it takes a bit of time for people to get what we tried to do. And sometimes they just don't get it and it's fine, you know?
So the motivation comes more from the inside than from the outside.
It's a bit hard to try to please people because people, it's impossible to identify, you know, like you have, I don't know, like 15 years old guys or like 50 years old ladies and everything in between that are coming from different musical backgrounds that liked one track specifically in what we did. And so it would be pointless to try to please everybody. So then we just try to please ourselves first, and somehow people are gonna find something in that process. Yeah.
100%.
But actually, this is what is great is that we still have a young audience, and we have also the hardcore fans from 2007, and it's obviously very interesting to get like a new audience for each record. And you can only achieve that if you change your music. You know, obviously, like some elements are here to stay, but it's always good to expand the spectrum of what you can do and what you want to do. And
the fat kick is still there, like the fat drums. There are no drums in the back or so. It's always in the front.
I mean.
Like this is what I recognize from all the albums
yeah,
so
true.
Far. Also on Escapade. But yeah, I mean, for example, Cross had a big influence on my generation or people who were young adults at that time. It's crazy because it was something new for me also. It brought me a completely new, yeah, kind of music, must say. So thank you for that, for the album.
Yeah, but I guess it was mostly because we really didn't know what was happening in clubs, you know. I guess this is why it... And it was not proper club music, you know, that the things we did. Yeah. It worked on energy, but it was not very DJ friendly or club friendly. You know?
Like Boys Noise once said that he's producing music for his own DJ sets. And when other DJs don't get it and can't play it, it's okay for him. He just does it for, his own sets. And I think the same matches your idea. Yeah. How is it for you now? Like, as we were talking, you were doing music with Xavier a long time, also with other great musicians like DJ Mehdi, for example. How is it for you now to sit in the studio alone? I love quotes, and you once said, it's mostly when everything was finished that it became some kind of challenge to come up with a different character without the comfort of the duo or the trio, if you count the Cross as a band member, and if our duo works on complementary dynamics and a common vision, it was liberating to escape compromises. Why was it then liberating for you?
Obviously I'm very happy, you know, like working with Xavier in a duo, but since we are not the same person, there's always a level of compromise, you know, that you have to make. But just because we work in a very democratic way, you know, like if one of us like doesn't like something, we just scrap it or try to change it like until everybody's happy. And so yeah, in that sense, there is a bit of compromise. But yeah, then when you're on your own, it's a bit maybe it's a bit harder like to see like the final product, but I guess it's also exciting like to come with new ways of presenting your music and presenting yourself. Because yeah, in Justice, like the Cross like was doing all the job of, you know, like incarnating the music. And I guess, yeah, for my own music, I was like, okay, maybe I just have to be in the pictures and to be in the videos and stuff like this, yeah. Which is something I really don't like, but I guess it makes sense, you know, like to some extent. But I mean, it's something I don't like. I'm just like really not comfortable with cameras and everything.
Being in the center.
But yeah, I mean, it's my music. So I guess it's, it makes sense. And I guess it's more fun for people to see me in the videos and everything. Just because it's just make the whole thing more personal.
Yeah. Were there any doubts at some time that you were thinking like, okay, I started this solo project or this album, but as you said, sometimes it's hard to find the end of the tunnel maybe for a song or to see the final product. Were there any doubts at some point?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like there's always doubt, you know, because and especially when you start working on tracks for a certain amount of time, it's easy like to lose the focus, you know, and just to get a bit tired of the track, and then you're like, oh yeah, is it like really worth it? Is it really worth like pushing this one? And also, this is what's important: it's just not to keep everything for yourself and then release the record. And it's important to involve like friends. You trust in like in the process, you know, like because obviously like most of my friends are making music or like images and stuff like this, so it's always important to have like a sincere feedback, you know, from friends, and but also it can be also a problem when you ask like too many friends and when you start like asking everybody like, is this good enough, whatever.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
So then you have
then,
to pick the right ones that are gonna be very frank, and then you can like start to finalize things with a clear mind.
Yeah, I can imagine a sincere feedback is maybe more worth than feedback from hundreds or thousands that are just saying, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah. No, and it's just really helpful. And I mean, it's not even like for art, you know, like it's for everything. Like it's the only way to make things change is to be frank to each other and not like pretend like, you know, everything is good or exciting or. But I mean, obviously, you're never happy like hearing your friend telling you, oh, yeah, I don't like this video, I don't like this track. But that's what friends are for, you know? Like.
That's true. Gaspar, what comes next? Is there going to be a solo tour when never touring is possible again?
I don't really know how I'm going to be able to tour for this record because it would mean like just put up a band together, like in this music played by I don't know, like 5 people on stage, like would lose a lot, I guess, and maybe
a lot of energy. Or what do you mean?
No, I mean it could win something, but it's just like even visually, like I can't really see like a flute player, like you know, with a bassist and a drummer and. I guess it's something that is a bit tricky to achieve well. So maybe I'm trying to think of a way to make a few one-offs, you know, with orchestras and choirs and things like this. But yeah, it's still the process of, for now, it's just a concept and we'll see if it happens. Yeah.
So there we are again, like in the beginning of our conversation, think big, doing great music, not just good music. So first thought, like starting with an orchestra, a choir and like 100 people involved. I like that.
It's really not out of ambition. It's just that I guess it would serve the music better than having a band, you know, a proper like a 5-piece band. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... yeah, I guess this kind of music, like, it's definitely not rock music. And I guess the rock element, like, I mean, the rock element of just having, like, people, like, playing on stage as a band would probably not serve the music.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's always hard to, like, when you record everything at the studio, especially when you record it all by yourself, then imagine that other people...
yeah.
Can play, or there's a setting like you had in studio that could fit live, because live it's not always the same as in the studio, of course. Yeah, I can totally imagine that. But I've also heard like in one interview I've read that you were talking that this album is in between like a record and a tour. So is there another record by Justice coming?
We are like because we never stop like working with Xavier, so we have a lot of music slowly coming together, and so I guess we are almost like halfway through the record, and yeah, so we've always kept like the same pattern of, you know, like spending 1 year and a half in the studio, 6 months, 8 months preparing the live shows, and then touring for 1 year and a half. So obviously this is why we have so little records out, because it takes time. But and also this is what is exciting for me to do this solo record, is that it's a bit like breaking this pattern of, you know, like making music for 1 year and a half and then touring and playing this music out, which is very exciting but less creative than just making music, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, Gaspar, so a lot of things that we can expect? I'm really excited to maybe see a live show then with the orchestra and
thanks. Choir.
I will definitely be there when it is going to happen. And of course, whenever you're on tour with Xavier, I'm very happy to be in the audience then again. Gaspar, I thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Well, now that's something to look forward to. Whenever the guys are on tour again, I can really recommend seeing them live. It's definitely a powerful experience. Thanks for listening, and I hope you guys enjoyed this episode again. If you have any feedback, we are happy to hear from you on Instagram or on Apple Podcasts. Until then, let's hopefully meet on the dance floor soon.
Das war der Telekom Electronic Beats Podcast.
Abonniert den Podcast bei Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify oder Deezer.
Wir sehen uns im Club.
Bis dann.